You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, so this particular episode of the council segment is going to be kind of interesting because what we're going to try to do is put like 55 pounds of rice in a 20-pound bag. We got a lot of stuff to cover. Some of you know that I said like last week, we're coming up on the 178th meeting of the council. It's not that old. It's only in its 40s, but they meet between two and three times a year, and this one's coming up. It's here in Honolulu, and it's going to be a big deal. And to help with that is one of my main connections to the council, and has been for years, is Josh DeMello. He is the fisheries analyst and joins us to discuss what's happening. Where you guys, for the next several days, not too much sleep. You got a lot of work to do. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
You know, it's interesting because depending on when people are listening, they're either listening on Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning. This coming Monday, depending on when you're listening, is some really, really important stuff. And I'm guessing it'd be hard to disagree that there's some very, very important decisions going to be made right here in Honolulu during the next week.
Oh, there's lots of stuff going on, especially for Hawaii fishermen. One of the biggest ones we have is the main Hawaiian island Kona crab stock assessment that the council will look at to make a annual catch limit.
We have had some really good discussions, as you know, in the past several weeks on the program. First with Marlo Saboteur talking about how the assessment was done, and then Mark Fitchett, who was involved in it as well. And it looks to me, if people that are listening, I'm talking about little mom and pops, if they really put their minds to it, there's some serious opportunities in Kona crab.
Oh, definitely. I know that it's always limited because of the way that you can market it.
Yeah.
And you can't hold it as long as some of these other crabs.
It doesn't have a long shelf life.
Right. And even freezing it, not very good. Yeah, you know, you pretty much want it live, especially for the raw market.
But what blows me away is what's out there. I mean, you know, some people know how to do it. They'll go out, go to crab, I'm going to catch my crab. But they're, from what I understand, the original thoughts about how plenty they are has been augmented by new ways to do the stock assessment. So it looks like there's a lot of opportunity there.
Oh, definitely. And we do hear from fishermen that the fishery is really by calling someone up and saying, hey, I need so much Kona crab,
right,
and they'll
right.
go out and fish for it because
otherwise
they'll have a bunch, and if they can't unload it, they can't unload it.
Well, that's the whole point. Isn't there going to be an opportunity for somebody based on these meetings to come up with a business plan and say, okay, if I can catch them, how can I sell them? If I get a distribution going, and it's kind of a leap of faith, right? If I'm a restaurant and you come into me and say, I can catch you Kona crab, I start featuring, I'm going to want it.
Right. And you got, that's the whole thing about commercial fisheries is you got to be consistent. You got to have that consistent supply for the restaurants. Otherwise, they're going to have to replace it with something else.
Yeah. And that's something, look, we talk about this a lot. That something else may not be as desirable as the Kona crab that they wanted. And there's nothing more than a upset, a customer comes in and says, hey, you advertise it. I brought my friends here to eat Kona crab and you don't have Kona crab. I'm out of here.
Right.
And I'm not coming back.
Right, and sometimes that whatever replaces on the menu is even more consistent, so they might just turn away the Kona crab and go,
and be done with it. What is from the standpoint of the fishery, what makes it unique? Why is it? I know it doesn't last long, but it is kind of unique, right? There are not that many examples of that crab in too many places.
I think for Hawaii, it really started as more of part of a mixed gear fishery. They would be, bottom fish guys,
exactly.
A lot of the guys that would go fishing for it. And there were actually a few guys that were actually targeting Kona crab that you actually had a lot of landings.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the state banned the Kona crabs on the fishing boats, on the bottom fish trips, then you saw a lot of guys drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And then those highliners that were catching lots of Kona crab, those guys either passed or stopped fishing. So
yeah, now, it was a handful, right? And then it disappeared.
And you probably have a lot more people doing it recreationally.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we don't get their data, so we really don't know.
But what's really cool to me is the way they catch them. I mean, I do know that some of the guys, six or eight guys that are doing it commercially, they have these nets strung together. And they put it out with some bait on them. And it seems to me like I don't know if it's primitive or what, but it looks like it's a flat net, right, that they use most of the time. And that means that you tie a fish head or something on it. And then doesn't something come and eat your bait besides the crabs?
Oh, yeah. There's a video from Poseidon Fisheries Research that shows that there's a lot of things that come snooping around at the bait and even at the crabs themselves. Yeah. And you have puffer fish and spotted eagle rays that are the main culprits.
They love that.
Taking the crabs. And then you have sharks and other fish that come around and take the bait as well.
So for those that know and don't know, and I do know that it varies, but what I understand is that they're found at varying depth. There's some that either come into really shallow water, but it's usually a little bit deeper.
It depends on the season. There's the season, you know, they come into to breed and reproduce. So that's why it's closed during the summer,
right?
The summer months, but we've also been
That's another example, gang, of the R month rule, right? I mean, if it has an R in it, you can catch your lobsters and your crabs. If it doesn't, you're out.
Right. Yeah. But we've also heard that some of these crabs are still have eggs into September.
Wow.
And so maybe the seasons aren't correct in some places.
You know what? I'm glad you said that. We have talked about that before. Remember when we were talking about area supervision and input as to that a crab season may be not paying attention to the R months at all? It might just have its own thing going?
Well, and possibly, you know, the changes due to climate change, fishing pressure, all kinds of other outside influences might have changed that season.
Okay, so what's your gut feeling about what's coming up this week on the Kona crab fishery?
So the council will take action, or may take action, I should say, on specifying an annual catch limit based on the stock assessment. And right now, the stock assessment looks really good. And
so that means it's going to have a moderately high limit, maybe you said.
And the past 5 years or so, I think we've probably averaged about 2,600 to 2,900 pounds. Our annual catch limit was 3,500 pounds based on average catch. But the stock assessment looks like somewhere around 30,000 pounds.
Woo! I'm in. Right. Only because, listen, by the way, if you are a Kona crab fisherman and you were listening to what Josh and I were talking about before, put me on your list, okay? I mean, if you're going to be out there catching, we're going to be buying them. But that's another thing, isn't it, sort of interesting? And when we start talking about some of the other members that are being here at the meetings from far flung throughout the whole district, that we are more likely to be able to go from ocean to plate, you know, knowing that they're not going to keep. You got to get your Kona crab and you got to eat them.
And I think more importantly, things like the stock assessment, how it changed from the previous calculations, is really a testament to the cooperative research that's been done with fishermen and the fishery scientists, and looking at things like growth rates or tagging Kona crab or how long they live or what happens if a limb comes off. And some of these scientists have been working with fishermen to get samples and put them in the Waikiki Aquarium and test all this stuff.
It's ironic that you say that, because, as you know, I'm very close to Dr. Andy Rossiter from the aquarium, and they long to do that sort of experimentation because they know how valuable it can be.
Yeah, and they've been great partners with Poseidon Fishery Research and the Council and National Marine Fisheries Service.
How has technology helped to do the stock assessments? I do know that, you know, before you'd rely on the old tutukani that sitting out on the end of the pier about how many akuli there are out there, right?
Right.
But now it's not anecdotal. There's actually science in the way the assessments are done.
Well, so take things like the akuli fishery, you know. Before you either had someone tell you, or you would go take a plane up and you'd have to have a spotter that would tell you.
Who could differentiate between Hallalu and Akuli and Opelo and all of this stuff.
Right, and estimate the biomass.
Yeah.
And tell someone, oh, yeah. There's about 50,000 pounds. You guys can go down there and pull it. And usually the fishermen they don't take all 50,000 pounds. They take whatever their net has. And a lot of the school will split and will drive it to shore, and everyone on shore gets to enjoy it.
I got to tell you, I remember when this used to happen on Kauai years ago, when the community would get together and they would surround a pile and they would all take for days, you know, just a little bit. And then they'd open the net and let the fish go. And unfortunately, there's been a number of people that come here from other places, and their mindset's not the same. There's catch and sell. So maybe in the long run, some of that, what you talk about is making, you know, the understanding, all right. And my question is kind of a long question. My question is, when the catch limit is determined, it's based on the science of sustaining the fishery, right? So you can take that much every year and keep the fishery.
Right. And so that's the first part, is how much fish is in the ocean and how much can you take without it affecting its current reproductive replacement. And so we take that information and then we subtract all the uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So if you have uncertainty in how quickly we'll get the data, how quickly or how well the model was made, or how important it is to the culture and traditions of Hawaii, and all of that is taken into account when developing that final number.
You know, here's a question that's always come up, and that is, just assuming that as the population on land increases, that what you can take out of the ocean is going to meet that demand. And isn't that the fine line that we're trying to discover here? That, you know, just because you have more demand doesn't mean you can take more, because pretty soon you'll exhaust it.
Right, right. And you're trying to find that balance of where you can take without hurting the stock and sending it plummeting and not being able to reproduce itself while taking that same amount. That's the whole black box of fisheries management. And by the way,
when he talks about that, we often tell you, gang, that the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council relies on bottom-up information. And so the guys that are making the decisions, Josh, are at the top. But where they're gaining their material and their reports are coming from people who, I guess, are finally starting to feel a little bit more free with what they're willing to share.
And we have our advisory panels that provide input, our plan teams, our scientific and statistical committee, and all of these groups that provide information to the council. And so I think one of the most important parts is knowing who these members are and the community talking to these guys, because that's your direct line to the council. I mean, you can always call me, you can always call the council and provide input, but this is your person that's living down the street from you that can give your voice to the council.
Yeah, and what you want to do, like Josh says, is get in the habit of doing what I do, and that's going to wbcouncil.org, and click on the banner that you're interested in about upcoming events and things, and you'll find that there's a myriad of stuff that you can drag down. You can listen to our shows. You can do all kinds of stuff. It's very, very user-friendly, and particularly, and I know that a lot of this comes out during these meetings and after Fisher's Forum, which we're going to talk about. Those of you that are in education, particularly during summer, you're trying to come up with curriculum ideas. Boy, you guys have a host of stuff, right? Teachers are like, come on in. The water's fine. Take what you need. Let's go.
Yeah, and we have our high school class going on right now. Yeah. And hopefully they'll be coming down to the council meeting and checking it out too.
Okay, let's give a sort of a big look at stuff. You mentioned we talked a little bit about the corner crab, but what are some of the other things that this audience could relate to, what goes on during the meetings, which, by the way, gang, start Monday and are next week in length?
So I think there's a little bit of everything. You know, if you like turtles and seabirds and marine mammals, we're going to talk about that on Tuesday under our protected species section and how that impacts fisheries. We'll also talk about the Hawaii fishery issues, which include the opening of the bottom fish restricted fishing areas, the four of them anyway, that the state announced yesterday.
And by the way, gang, even though it's some of us are a little disappointed that it's not more than four, it is four. And my column in the Hawaii Boats and Yachts in July will be on that, on the four berthers that they've opened and sort of the wisdom that went into it. And I don't know, Josh, I know that you're hearing from a lot of people. People are really, really happy that this is happening, but they want more.
right. You know? And you know, that's the whole thing that the council has been pushing to open all of them, because we're in a coordinated management efforts with the state, and it doesn't provide any additional protection.
Well, what is interesting to me, and you know more about it than I do, and you can comment on this. We talked a little bit a while ago about the dwindling numbers of corner crab fishermen there are. Just bottom fishing, with the restrictions that they've been in some of the places that people have had to go further and longer and all of that stuff, and they're getting older, there's not as many bottom fishermen as there used to be.
Because it's not as easy as throwing a line and dragging it behind your boat.
Oh, yeah, it's not trolling.
Trolling, as long as you're going, you have the either the bait or the
yeah,
speed.
Got some birds, speed, whatever.
Right,
yeah.
You know, you might catch, you'll catch something, mm-hmm. Ono, mahi, something, yeah, yeah. But bottom fish is more specialized, and you got to know what kind of features you're looking for, yeah, underwater, and where those places are, and at what depth to actually catch certain species. And so there's not that many people that do it. There's not many young people that do it.
Because it's hard work. It's the same thing. We could Josh and I have done this before. We could talk about the long line opportunities for people to go out fishing until the cows come home. Young guys, I'm not going. That takes too much. It's too hard.
Well, and some of these older fishermen, you know, they didn't push their kids to get into fishing because they didn't see the future of fishing being so great for that could support them. And instead, you know, you're working hard and trying to get your kids to go to college and get good jobs, be doctors and lawyers or whatever.
Yeah, but by the way, it's when you go down, look, nobody gets rich fishing, but it's a great life. Some people just love getting out there, not having a cell phone or a screaming next door neighbor for a couple of weeks at a time, right? But most of us are more practical. So in other words, let's make sure that people understand when you start talking about these limits on the BRFAs, for instance. For those that don't know, explain. First of all, how did those areas come to be closed off in the first place?
So back in the late 90s, there was a stock assessment that was done, and it came up with that the fishery was being overfishing.
They're calling it threatened or whatever.
You're right. There's overfishing, I believe, in the bottom fish fishery. So something had to be done, and so part of it was to close areas where the state believed that were important to these fish.
These are just like random, right? They found the area. There was bottom fish there, and they think, okay, this is a nursery.
Well, I think they tried to figure out where the good habitat was, mm-hmm. and then fishermen would provide them with additional areas. But you know, sometimes you're not going to give them where you go fishing, so you're going to say, oh, you can close off over here, you know, because nobody's going there. So I think it was a mix of both, and we ended up with areas that were close to bottom fishing.
What we need to do is point out to people that are listening what a bottom fisherman goes through, because most of the bottom fishing boats are not big. Matter of fact, very few of them are big. It costs too much money to run a big boat to what the return is. But when you get out there, sometimes the weather's not so good. You're rocking and rolling for hours at a time, and the fish aren't biting, and it's raining. I mean, you know, there's a lot, it's hard to go out there and catch those fish.
Right, and it's... You know, it's not for everyone, but like you said, there are people that love that kind of life.
Yeah. And, you know, I miss a lot, and I'm sure a lot of do, Ed Ebisui. You know, he was such a good guy and such a great patient bottom fisherman. And I have one picture of him with his massive onaga. And you've never seen a smile as wide as that. This guy was from one ear to the other. And isn't it also true that there are really only a handful of real sensei ninja bottom fishermen? There just aren't that many anymore.
Yeah, the information is just held between those fishermen, you know, and unless you can show that, oh, that's what you want to do, then they'll teach you. And even Ed talks about that in that bottom fish video.
That's a great, Ed Watamura is talking about it. It's a great piece. Okay, so that means that these four areas have been open. What's next with the responsibility of monitoring and all that to determine not only that it's open, but that you can successfully take there without killing the limit?
I think part of it is the state will be working on changing the grid areas, and so those BRFA areas will have their own number or split or something, so that if you catch in those areas, they want to know if you're catching in that area. So it's important for fishermen to actually report that they're catching in the area.
Because, look, a lot of people think, well, if I say nothing, that means what? That means nothing. It's of no value in stock.
But it also says that, oh, well, nobody's fishing there, so why did we even open it?
Exactly. Yeah. I don't even know how to ask this question, but does it mean that they're open period, or they're open for a test period, or what is this with these four areas that just happened?
I believe they're permanently open, mm-hmm. and after a few years, the Board of Land and Natural Resources agreed to review.
Go and reassess it.
And see what's going to happen. And if the stock is still doing good, then they will look at opening the rest of them.
somebody that's not listening, that doesn't understand why we would be talking about this. Let's say that if you are a restaurant and that you wanted opaka-paka on your menu and that you could be guaranteed the fish because the fisherman's going to go out and get it, that's one thing. But if that stops or if you've reached the limit, then your customer still wants it. Now you're bringing it in from somewhere else, and that impacts the fishery because it's not from Hawaii.
Right, and if over the longer period you don't have that fish, they're going to need to keep ordering it from Indonesia or New Zealand Thai snapper kind of stuff. And eventually it's like, well, you know what? We already ordered. It's cheaper. We'll just people don't care.
I know that happened in some respects. It started happening for a while with Mai Mai. You know, they're bringing in, the dolphin fish from other places and calling it Mai Mai. A lot of the locals, including me and others, got kind of resentful. Hey, wait a minute, that's not Mai Mai. It's a dolphin fish, but look, it's got funny kind teeth. That's not our Mai Mai.
Well, and that's why when there was that big mahi mahi shortage a few years ago, and you couldn't even get it at like places like Rainbows, they were out of mahi mahi.
Can you imagine? And that was all frozen from Taiwan in the first place,
right? Or Ecuador or somewhere in the South America.
You know, it's kind of funny because a friend of mine just got back from Mexico, and they don't actually even keep them. You know, I mean, they don't understand what a good table fish that is. They just.
My brother used to work on ships in the Atlantic, and he would go fishing for aku. They didn't like aku. He loves aku. He loves aku. That's his favorite. And so he would keep all that aku, and they just look at him like, why are you keeping that trash fish?
Well, that's the other thing. And you talked about before Kona crab not traveling very well and not lasting shelf life. That was always the biggest issue about skiptack, about aku, right? That, you know, you got to catch it and eat it because it doesn't like to flop around in your fish box for very long.
All right. He just dried down the back of the ship.
Okay, so anyway, I think what it's interesting to note, and let's talk about, because we're going to have a time constraint here in a few minutes, let's start talking about some of the other things that are happening as this series of meetings goes through this week.
And so that was Tuesday. Wednesday, we'll talk about pelagics and international fisheries and American Samoa fisheries, and we'll talk more about what's going on in national legislation. Pelagic fisheries, we're really looking at the territorial longline quotas that will be set on the fishery. We're also looking at some of the other issues with things like false killer whales and the
loggerheads.
The loggerheads and leatherbacks those types of issues.
What the most feedback that I've got from one of the programs that we did, I don't know if whether it was with I can't even remember when we were talking about this the last time, but when we were talking about turtles and what's an interaction and what's a death, I mean, the longline fleet that has to stop fishing the shallow set for the swordfish, when they had to stop, was based on seeing turtles almost. I mean, you know, it wasn't based on a whole bunch of turtles getting slayed and chopped up in the props or eaten by sharks. It was like, there's a turtle, and now we can't get swordfish anymore.
And I think that's the misconception with a lot of these protected species. It's they may be hooked or they may be interacted with or make them change their direction or something. It's not necessarily killing these animals.
Yeah. So anyway, I kind of learned that. And didn't we actually shut this year a little bit earlier because it reached that number, whether it was 17 or whatever it was, reached it early.
Yeah. And I think what's good to check out is our Fishers Forum that's going to happen on Tuesday, June 25th, because there's guys that are working on this type of technology to, engineer bycatch solutions, so you would be able to dissuade marine mammals from taking your hook.
And there are ways that this could be done, by the way, and that it's the Fishers Forum that Josh is talking about that's open to you folks is called Fishing in the Future: Emerging Technologies and Fisheries. And I know that science kind of, you know, like highbrow and all of that stuff, but I know it's going to be pretty much explained. And there's lots of opportunity. This is isn't for all of you guys that work long hours and go to these meetings, isn't the forum a little bit more on the fun side of things?
Yeah, especially with this one. This one kind of has that cool factor because, you know, boys like their toys, and you have this, guys talking about their smartphone applications and how they can help fishermen. You have guys that use drones to spot fish. You have, tuna tagging and all this type of technology that's going into fisheries that you can see that's helping fisheries science and fishermen to catch fish.
Yeah, by the way, this is free, and it's family friendly. It happens this year, well, most time. This is at the Ala Moana Hotel, Hibiscus Ballroom, from 6 to 9 o'clock on Tuesday. I guess maybe, and the reason this is done is it's to show the transparency. I think a lot of people that don't understand how the council likes to work at that level, they're pleasantly surprised when they come to one of these events and say, "Hey, I'm included. I can do stuff." You're going to give away some pretty cool stuff too.
Yeah, and so part of it is we may be giving away a Shimano reel as a grand prize.
A gold Shimano reel.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, people come for, they might come for some refreshments and for our booths that we have set up. You can talk to the Coast Guard. You can talk to Pacific Island Fisheries Group and check out all the information. But then you also have this panel discussion and presentations, and you get a chance to ask questions. And all your council members are there, so there's a chance for you to talk to your council members as well.
There's another thing I think we ought to talk on, Josh, on that, and that is that the council district, our district is the largest in the country, and it represents a far-flung part of the Pacific. And these meetings, particularly when they're on Oahu, it comes from, and we're going to talk about this next week on the show, that it comes from some people got to go through a lot of hardships to get here, up here and share their manao and learn and agree and in some respects argue for a week.
Right. And you know, some people that might be listening, you might be from some of those island areas and you might have a passion for your homeland, and you might want to tell your council members from that area to, you know, hey, let's think of some new ideas to help manage our fisheries.
And by the way, I'm always seeing a change. And there's been a recent change. Couple guys have retired, a couple guys, new guys are coming in. So for you, now you're becoming one of the senior staffers, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
When was it that you started there?
I started in 2002.
That's what I thought.
You know? Right. So,
and this is
17 years.
17 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the forum. And how does the week wrap up?
And so the week wraps up on Thursday, the 26th, with the Mariana Archipelago Fisheries, which is Saipan and Rodan Tinian, part of the CNMI. As well as Guam, and then we talk about administrative issues such as upcoming meetings and changes to our teams and that kind of reports.
You know what I think is kind of neat, and this starts out with the scholarships and the programs in the summer that we are finding. You said something earlier that, you know, for some of these bottom fishermen and the corner crab guys and the bottom fishermen, it was hard to get young people into it. Now young people are starting to figure out that I don't have to go out and bottom fish all night to be in the fishery. I can be in an office. I can be doing technical stuff. So it seems to me that this is another opportunity, particularly the Fisheries Forum, once again, to have a family come down and say, if somebody's been even indicating a little bit that they want a future, they can find out more.
Well, and, you know, growing up in the islands, you really are surrounded by ocean, and a lot of kids grow up surfing, paddling, diving, fishing. So why not go into something that you already know and love?
I actually found out, and it's kind of funny because in the next week or so, we got our friend Mike Lum. I'm sorry, Mike Kim. And this is the New Hope, kids fishing tournament out in Hawaii Kai, where a kid learns how to catch a little fish and release it, take a picture, and it's like, it really gives. When I was a small kid, you used to go catch them and bring them and feed them to a cat or something. But now you say, you get to let them go. But isn't that, don't we need a whole bunch of parents and stuff to see these things and maybe show up at the forum and be a part of it?
Yeah, and it's all about taking time out of your busy schedules to, you know, promote something that you enjoy and to your kids that hopefully that they can get involved in that when they grow up as well.
Yeah, and you know, we do this on a regular basis, and we all often mention, if you see something, if you want to hear something on the program, to let us know. But just so that you know, that we'll be talking again next week on some of the other things that happened at the meeting, and some of our folks that visit from very far away. But once again, if they want to go, it's wpcouncil.org, wpcouncil.org, or if you want to get to the forum is one more time, it's
June 25th at the Ala Moana Hotel from 6 to 9 p.m.
Show up. Free fun stuff. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you win that Shimano reel. And we'll see you next time. Remember, something you want to hear on the rest of the show, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. See you next time. Aloha.